Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That was Cam Hayward with Colin Cowherd. You probably remember that clip talking about Kenny Pickett and his development. He's a worker. He loves to work. He stepped up at the end of the season. Why am I playing that now? You might ask. What is Malzi doing? You might ask. By the way, PM team, Andrew Filippone off. He's in Florida, soaking up the sun on the Gulf Coast. I think he's going to go to a Mets game while he's down there, Mets Marlins. I think he's going to make the little sojourn across the Everglades and go hit up a baseball game with, like, what, 250 of his closest friends? Got to be a lot of Mets fans down there. That'll be a decent crowd full of Mets fans, I would think.
Yeah, I think the Mets will probably have the control of the crowd. Plus, that is...
To get a majority down there, you need about 1,000.
Yeah, and that's not the official opener for the Marlins. So, it's like you get that one game in, you know, the home crowd has already had it, and then...
Peace.
There you go.
So, Pony's off. Why am I playing that Kenny Pickett clip? What does 8.5 mean? Well, the astute among you might have made a reasonably good educated guess as to my cryptic tease. 8.5. We get odds all the time. We get emails. We get promotional emails. Most of them get the click, delete, click, delete, click, delete. But the ones I really like, the ones that are useful to me, are the ones that get sent out from various betting houses. Early lines on the NFL season. And the people who do this are very smart. They send them like after free agency, after the draft. The sharps in Vegas have taken account of all the player movement and reconfigured their win totals. And the Steelers, as I look at the most recent one I got, the opening NFL win totals, are sitting at 8.5, which is, in case you're scoring this at home, tied for the seller in the AFC North. Cincinnati, 11.5. Baltimore, or Cleveland, 9. Baltimore, 8.5. Steelers, 8.5. I maybe oversimplify this, but I think these numbers tend to be predicated on two things. Your team's overall level of competition that they see in the division, because you got to see all these teams twice. So there's got to usually be a power broker team, a team that obviously is the best. It's the Bengals this year. The Bills have it in the AFC East. That's probably not surprising. Won't surprise you either to find out that the Chiefs are a robust 11.5 themselves. You kind of get how it works, right? There usually has to be a team that's at the top, team at the bottom, and then the two in the middle can always be a little wonky. So I think it's based on the relative strength or the perceived strength of your division. And then on a more fundamental level, I think it's really these win totals are typically about what the Vegas crowd thinks of your quarterback more than anything else. I'd look at the Steelers in free agency and say they cut a lot of dead weight. I thought they got cheaper at positions where it pays to be cheap, where you can just, you're not going to get bang for your buck at inside linebacker like you want to with other positions. And I thought they got smarter there. I thought, and I've written about this, I've said this on the air. I think that so far what they've done has Andy Weidel's fingerprints everywhere. If this was a crime scene, they'd have Andy Weidel doing a perp walk right now because he's had so many fingerprints over this offseason for the Steelers in free agency. Mike Tomlin, Omar Khan have clearly said, hey, this guy's reputation precedes him. He helped build the Eagles into what they are now, a force to be reckoned with. Let's let the guy cook a little bit. He's building our draft board. Let's let him do free agency. And I think the results so far have been good. They've created at the very bare minimum more competition on the interior of their offensive line. They've got a couple of holes and question marks on the roster, but you can, I think, look at them, and I would refute the notion of this. You can look at them and say they've gotten a little bit better. I think they have improved at more positions than they have created problems for themselves. They didn't get a tackle. They could still draft one. They don't have a starting safety next to Minka. They could either still sign John Johnson on the cheap, which would be I'd be advocating, hit the John Johnson button, or they can go out and get somebody in the draft. The reason I've got to believe that they're at 8.5 here, when they were at last year for the record, 7.5, ended up with 9. The reason that they are tied with the Ravens, who I think, by the way, theirs can be explained with overall Lamar Jackson uncertainty. The guy wouldn't have to show up till week 10. That would skew things. The reason I think the Steelers are down there is because I think there is a lack of belief so far in the people who set these lines on Kenny Pickett. I don't know really what else it could come down to. Is the quarterback good enough to make the leap that Cam Hayward is talking about having belief that he will make? And I do think, as much as I want Pickett to succeed and as much as I saw some things in those games at the end of the season that make me believe he can be better, there are question marks that have nothing to do with who's calling the plays, who's protecting him. There are question marks with him, period, that he needs to answer, or questions that he needs to answer. Can I throw the ball downfield regularly, successfully, not just short or not just the occasional sideline go ball? Am I, like, the question in one sentence that I think will go the longest towards determining what the Steelers are? Obviously, this is before they draft. Who knows what happens there? The one sentence question is, in year two, does Kenny Pickett start dictating terms to other teams, not the other way around? Because right now, saying that they're going to be an 8.5 win team suggests you think 8-9, 9-8 if you're setting that line. You think they're going to be one or the other. You want to get action on both sides of it? There it is. 8-9, 9-8. Middle of the road, probably not a playoff team. Look at it in their own division. They think the Browns are going to rebound. I'm not sure about it. They think the Bengals are going to be really good again. I buy that. You presume that if Aaron Rodgers does get over to the Jets eventually, that is a better team than the Steelers. I guess you presume if the Dolphins have Tua healthy for the year, big presumption, they'll be better. Bills, same deal, better. I've already named what? At least 4? Jags look like they're going to be better. 5. Chiefs look like they're better. 6. Chargers look like they're better. 7. Uh-oh, I just named the amount of playoff teams you get. So the people that set these lines right now, this second, still think the Steelers kind of are what they are. A team that's average. And that, for me, is a reflection of how they view the quarterback. What say you, Donnie? You think this is fair? Because I ultimately think it is. Like, I think it's pretty clear on this show that I've been a little bit more measured about old Ken Pickett. Not actual old Ken Pickett, just calling him old Ken Pickett. I think I've been more measured. I think I've been cautious with praise, occasionally dispensed blame, but fair. I think there are very real questions to answer. Mark Cabali and Pony are now like bosom buddies because they both feel he's going to make a leap. It's pretty clear that the people who are viewing this situation from 30,000 feet think that it's very much an up-in-the-air question, an open question as to whether he does it.
I'd probably put them at 10 wins.
10?
Yeah.
All right, I got to hear 10.
I know that we'll have a better idea after the draft of what they're dealing with, and then, you know, in about a month and a half, whenever that schedule comes out, so you see kind of what they're working with there.
Yeah.
But the schedule, at least the opponents, not as daunting to me as the year before. The division, obviously tough. If Lamar Jackson comes back and he plays the whole season, obviously that's tough. But you look at some of the teams on here, and sure, a couple of them, besides your division, strike some fear. I mean, you got San Francisco coming to town, Jacksonville, which will be a better team. Plus, they always seem to play well whenever they're in Pittsburgh, no matter who's each roster.
New England's no picnic, no matter what.
The Patriots. They never play well against the Raiders. However, it's not Oakland anymore. It's Las Vegas, so hopefully that turns things around. But you play the AFC South, which will be probably dealing with two rookie quarterbacks with Houston and Indy.
Yeah.
I don't think Tennessee is all that much to be afraid of. I think teams have figured them out. I mean, unless Derrick Henry truly carries them.
Do you think that when these lines are made, they are more about evaluating a team's schedule or evaluating the most important position in the sport?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both.
What do you think is a bigger influence?
They would probably look at the quarterbacks first, but then I think it's also fair to look to see who these teams are facing. I mean, their other division, that is, the crossover in the NFC is the West. It doesn't look as daunting as it did even just 2 years ago. Now, Geno Smith had his huge bounce back season. He got paid, but is he going to be able to follow up on that? The Rams look like a mess. I mean, they got their Super Bowl out of it, so I mean, they got the last lap, but they look like an absolute mess. They apparently don't want to work with Matt Stafford anymore, trying to throw him anywhere they can. The Cardinals,
so you say 10
don't
wins,
really
though.
Scare me.
You say, well, yeah, Kyler's not even going to play for part of the year. So you say 10 wins.
I'll put them at 10.
I can't go higher than 9, and I'm probably leaning towards 8 because I think the AFC has continued to see a rise at quarterback. So what, the first post-free agency win totals are out. Steelers tied for the lowest in the AFC North with Baltimore. Strange bedfellows at the bottom of the division looking up at Cleveland even, and of course at Cincinnati. 8.5 wins. I think it's a referendum from the national folks, from the Vegas insiders, from the people who set these lines and they don't often lose money. I think it's a referendum on the quarterback here.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Where do you put this one on the Seager catalog? How high up?
Probably top five.
Is Turn the Page automatically number one?
I do like Turn the Page. Old time rock and roll.
I was
going to
say,
one.
What about Like a Rock?
That's a good one, too. He's got a lot of bangers.
I'll tell you what, Like a Rock feels like a song that he's... This is good product placement. It feels like the song was written for Chevy trucks and not just a song that they stuck on those commercials. Somebody was like, hey, Bob, take a look at this truck right here. Can you give us a song for it? Oh, Like a Rock! I just killed Seeger for a lot of people for the next 20 years with that little rendition. Including potentially our next guest, Brian Bacco, Steelers beat writer with the PG. Hi, Brian.
Night Moves is by far my favorite Seeger song, fellas.
Trying to make some front page driving news.
Love that. Yes. He gets a bad rap. Not everybody likes him, but I think that is a classic track.
Alex and I were at a random bar not that long ago, and Still the Same came on by Seeger. Unbelievable. The vibes turned something greater than immaculate, actually. It was the best vibes I've had in a situation in ages, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he's a little divisive, but I don't know. Some people think all his stuff sounds kind of the same, but that's why I like Night Moves. It's a little bit different. It's not as not as hokey as Like a Rock and some of the others. Old-time rock and roll.
Oh, come on. Just take those old records off the shelf, Brian.
I mean, hey, I'm not trying to hate on him. I like him, as I said. But, yeah, for me, it's Night Moves in a tier of its own, and then the rest of the catalog somewhere else.
Speaking of things that haven't been quite the same as usual, would you classify Steelers free agency as such? Like, do you feel like what you saw from them, the way they behaved, was appreciably different, notably different from what they had done throughout the Kevin Colbert, Mike Tomlin free agency era?
No, not really. You know, in quantity, it's almost exactly the same now as last year. In quality, I mean, that's much more debatable, but I think they're doing what they generally do. They're not making any of the moves that are getting talked about on Get Up in the Morning or are getting, evaluated by NFL Network ad nauseum. They're signing mid-level guys, making some moderate moves so that they're not really hurting at any particular spots in the draft. And I'm not saying they're bad moves by any means, but I do think it's been more business as usual for the Steelers rather than some sort of paradigm shift as some people are suggesting under Omar Khan. I think they've got their philosophies and I haven't seen much different in the way they went about it this year.
It seemed like it so far that it has Andy Weidel's fingerprints on it, though. I mean, there's several Weidel guys, basically. Like, I can't help but think that that's a significant development early on here. People wondering what kind of power he would have. It seems like he's not power, maybe, or influence, or whose ear he would have in that room. It sounds like he's got everybody's ear.
Yeah, that part of it definitely makes sense. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people, when they hired him, figured, okay, it stands to reason that you're going to follow the Eagles' blueprint to some degree. And, you know, even if he didn't come from that organization, I think with what they did last year with that roster, how they were built, how they were kind of a puzzle piece constructed around Jalen Hurts, I mean, it would make a lot of sense for organizations to look to repeat that formula to some degree. And they've got a guy who was actually in on the ground floor in scouting those players and helping them get to that point. So, yeah, I mean, the two offensive linemen who played for Philly, well, I guess three now if you count LaRaven Clark. I was a little surprised they went that heavy on remaking the line. I didn't think they were necessarily going to throw that many moves at it because they did bring back every starter. But clearly either he or everybody in that front office thought it was time for an upgrade on the interior. Now I think that kind of wipes that out from your draft plans. But if Isaac Seumalo can be a big upgrade as a starter and they feel like Nate Herbig is a big upgrade as a backup, then, yeah, I mean, I think those are very reasonable moves that they made, not unlike Mason Cole and James Daniels this time last year.
Brian Bacco, the PG, joining us right now on the PM team. Are they going to take a look at John Johnson as a free agent safety to try to patch the hole next to Minkah Fitzpatrick? And if not, why not?
Yeah, I think they'll take a look because, you know, they did this, they went about the safety position very similar last year. You know, they made a move quicker on DeMonte KZ this season than they did as opposed to last offseason where they were kind of waiting around week before the draft. That was an obvious hole on the roster that they hadn't filled. And then they go out and they and Terrell Edmonds return to one another. As we know now, that is not going to happen this season. Edmonds maybe finally said it's time for a change of scenery.
I want to get paid $2 million on the other side of the Commonwealth.
I was going to say, or the Steelers just put their chips on KZ for whatever reason, or a combination of both, which is probably most likely. So, yeah, I mean, they made a move kind of late in the game last year at safety. I think Johnson is maybe more of that deep post type that they already have in Minkah Fitzpatrick. And, you know, I don't know that they want to bring another older guy into that secondary. It's probably time to infuse some youth and some talent. But nothing would surprise me at this point, given that they signed Edmonds right before the draft last year. And they signed KZ, I think, late on day three of the draft. So, you know, it seems like they're constantly trying to find the right fit at that particular position.
Your colleague Rafe Apaldo put out a 7-round mock or a full mock because they obviously don't have some picks in the mid portions of that draft. And I think it was the first time I've seen a name outside sort of the usual. The big Tennessee tackle was his projected first rounder. Do you sense that they aren't necessarily wedded to the idea of trying to get one of the left tackle type guys, that they just are looking for help in the draft at either position?
Well, I think what's interesting about Darnell Wright from Tennessee is, yeah, he's not tossed into that bucket with the big three of Skoronski and Broderick Jones and Paris Johnson because he did play right last year in Knoxville, but he played left the previous season. And, you know, he even said out in Indy at the combine that he views himself as a left tackle and that it was best for the team last year for him to move over to the other side based on the experience of some of their other players. So, I don't think he's as, you know, rigid positionally as somebody like, you know, maybe DeJuan Jones, the big guy from Ohio State who's got the size and the crazy wingspan and everything, but didn't do any left tackle for the Buckeyes. So I think Wright is somebody who would make sense at 17 if, you know, if some of their better laid plans go awry or if they do or if they are sending us signals that, yeah, you know, we don't feel great about the offensive line, but we went out and addressed the interior again in free agency, and we want that cornerstone left tackle. We think we can get him in the draft, even if the top three in most people's eyes are gone. So I don't think that's a bad pick at all by Ray. It seems like Wright has been one of those risers in this process, and he's done it kind of the old-fashioned way by going to the Senior Bowl, putting in the work, doing well at the combine, and apparently doing pretty well in these interviews with teams, saying all the right things about his position fit and everything like that.
Oh, Mike Tomlin loves that, going into the Senior Bowl, putting in the work. That just screams something that Mike Tomlin, football guy, would just absolutely love.
He does it himself, so yeah.
How serious are they about Schmitz from Minnesota? I know you said they addressed the interior of the line, but they still had him in, had him visiting. Are they legitimately considering him with one of those non-first-round picks, those earlier picks?
I don't think so. Maybe it's just a situation where get him in here and, you know, get to know him a little bit in case he falls to you. I just don't think it makes a ton of sense to use a high pick on somebody who, you know, I don't think Mason Cole was bad last year. I maybe some people are not overly enamored with him and the work that he did, but I thought he was pretty solid, you know, definitely good enough to get you another year out of him in his 3-year contract, keep the continuity for Kenny Pickett, because we all know that is so crucial and so important to everything that was done personnel wise this offseason. So no, I don't see them using a day one or two pick on a center. Maybe they had made that decision to have him in for a visit previously. Maybe they want to look at something medical wise with them. And I just think that they've got a guy who has practiced at center a little bit in Nate Herbig, but probably more likely is that you just circle back to a JC Hassenauer or somebody like that as you get closer to the season and you need to solidify the top backup there.
Brian Bacco right now on the PM team talking Steelers. What is the earliest in your opinion that they take a wide receiver in this draft? If at all, I mean, it could be, you could just say, nope, pass.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a very wide range of outcomes, honestly. Could they throw us a curveball and take a receiver in the first round? I don't think that's going to happen. I certainly wouldn't bet on it. You won't see me probably doing any mock drafts with a receiver in the first round, but I wouldn't be stunned. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if they feel like, hey, Deontay Johnson's only got, you know, maybe one more year that we want to evaluate him before we have a decision to make. George Pickens is really good, but, you know, is he somebody that we're just going to funnel the ball to all the time? You know, they weren't overly interested in doing that his first season. So, and beyond those two, obviously they need some more talent in the pipeline there at receiver. So on the flip side of that, I think they'd be okay with the mix that they have. You know, Anthony Miller was having a nice camp last year before the injury. Even Cody White, I mean, they've used him in games and he does special team stuff. And nobody really knows what you're going to get out of Calvin Austin because we just haven't seen it. So that's why I say it could go anywhere. I mean, I could see waiting until the 7th round and get somebody with some traits that, hey, if you develop him in camp and you think he can play, great. If not, just cut him and move on with the guys you know that you already have. So I just think it could be anywhere. Day one, if there's
most likely day one, two, or three for them to pick a wide receiver.
Okay. Three is most likely. I think there's a lot more holes that you need to fill in those first 4 rounds. And then as you noted, at the top here, no 5th or 6th rounders at the moment. So you'll probably have to wait and, you know, get a high upside guy in the 7th. I think receiver would be a good position to use one of those picks on.
Brian, Steelers, I love getting these promotional emails about, like, you know, from just betting houses on the early. Oh, I love them because it's an automatic, you know, I don't want to call it a lazy guy topic, but it's an easy talker. You just say, here's the number. Let's roll the ball out
there. Open your inbox. It's right there for you.
Let's roll that. Well, I do what they don't like, which is I never give credit to the actual place sending it to me. I just take it and it's mine, all mine. 8.5
There's like 6 of them that send them now. So, I mean, what's the big deal about crediting one specific place?
Yeah, I get one more than any other, and it's usually pretty concise. And they're always very polite, too. They're always like, hey, I thought you might find this interesting. Well, aren't you in luck? Because
they call you by your name, too. Yes. They type that email up just for you, Chris.
Oh, yeah. No, I know that they're only emailing that to me. Where that guy is separately emailing everyone in the country a unique email. 8.5, though, sound like, as far as bowls of porridge go, would you like a bigger one as more likely for the Steelers or a smaller one in terms of their win total?
Man, I'm going to go with the same logic that I used last year. I'm not picking these guys to go under 500 until I see it. I mean, last year would have made all the sense in the world for them to sputter to the finish, turn in an 8-9, even a 7-10, maybe even 6-11 if they had never gotten back on track, and yet they found a way. So I'm not telling you that that means they're going to be a great team or be vastly improved or all of a sudden be a Super Bowl contender. But for as many years as I told myself I'm not going to believe in the Pirates to have a winning record, I'm not going to believe that the Steelers will have a losing record until they actually do it. There seems to be some sort of cosmic forces at work that keep them above that that line.
You know, on this show, Brian, we traffic heavily in scuttlebutt. We are just a scuttlebutt-oriented show. Are you hearing any scuttlebutt on, like, a lesser-known player? I'm talking about, like, you know, in that, like, third to fifth round range. You know, somebody that's not been mentioned a lot that the Steelers are hotter after than people think. Putting you on the spot here when I say that, fully understanding that I am absolutely putting you on the spot, but is there any of that, you know, I want you to basically look like the smartest guy in the room a month and a half from now or 5 weeks from now when they draft the player that you say right here and nobody saw it coming but you.
Well, here's a guy who is at a position that the Steelers, I think we can all agree they need to fortify it eventually, and your mileage may vary on whether they should do that in the first round, as Ray predicted, or maybe a little bit later. I think if they look to tackle in the middle rounds, a guy that I've heard is impressive on film, but is flying under the radar. I'm actually going to see him tomorrow because Pitt has their pro day. It's Carter Warren, who was Kenny Pickett's left tackle for the Panthers. I've heard some people are pretty high on him, not necessarily in the Steelers, but that he might be a better pro prospect than, you know, the kind of hive mind of outlets are looking. You know, his season ended after, I think, 3 or 4 games last year with a torn meniscus, but he was a big-time recruit coming out of New Jersey. And I think even, you know, among the Pitt fans, everybody's looking at where's Kalijah Kansi going to go? Where's Izzy Abanaconda going to go? I sort of wonder if Carter Warren might make some Pitt fans pleasantly surprised if a team takes a liking to him.
He's Brian Batko, Steelers beat writer for the Post-Gazette. Brian, thank you as always. A pleasure.
You're welcome. See you, Chris.
Oh, what's that music mean? That music means it's Malzie Madness time. By the way, text us Edgar Snyder and Associates fan text line 412-928-9370. Edgar Snyder and Associates reminds you to text responsibly. This is relevant. Follow us on Twitter at 937TheVan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Peters Township, SouthHillsJeep.com. So, I'll be honest with you. I'm a little embarrassed by the Pittsburgh Media Madness bracket. I'm a little embarrassed that I'm still alive. Not so much because I won last round. That was fine. And I actually put myself out there. I said, I want to beat Bob Labriola. I made no bones about it. I said, this guy drives me nuts. He wears the Super Bowl ring. He does a thing on their website called Asked and Answered. And it's almost exclusively an opportunity for him to crap on questions that he doesn't like and mock people for not being as smart as he is. I wanted to beat him. I beat him comfortably. We beat him like a drum. We did it together. And I moved on. Fine. The fact now that I'm still in this thing is starting to set in, and I'm getting a little embarrassed by it. Because here's how you gotta act with stuff like this. Here's the truth, folks. If you're in my position, you either have to, like, full-on embrace this and be concerned with people just calling you corny as hell, and why do you care about a bracket that you get nothing out of if you win, that everyone forgets about 2 days after it happened, right? What is there for you at the end of the rainbow here? Nothing. So you either really, really have a bad case of narcissism, you just are blinded by vanity and you want to win this, or you got nothing better to do. I don't want to fall into either of those buckets. So I'm always on the fence about stuff like this. And my default position is to usually just ignore it. If I lose in the first round, so be it. If I get ponied, like where he goes up against Hathorne in an SEC versus SEC matchup and he gets buried, hey, at least he doesn't have to think about it. That's how I'd usually prefer it to go. I made a very notable exception after getting by Christopher Carter in the first round that I wanted to beat Labs, and I did. But I think we all know who my opponent is now. It's Madden. It's Mueller. And you know what I was going to do? I'll be real honest. Said to myself, well, the matchup is upon us, and I am going to do nothing. I'm not going to retweet it. I'm not going to put anything out there. I don't care. I'm going to lose probably. I don't care. The seedings were determined by follower base. I don't care. I don't have enough followers to win this thing. Something happened last night, though, Donnie, that irked me. It's true. It's damn true. It started off, I voted, because why not? And I voted for myself. I wasn't so cool that I'm going to encourage people to vote for somebody, for the other person, and then voted for them myself. I'm not that guy, okay? I'm not. I got out to a brief early lead. He retweeted it, started to bury me. Then Pony put out an impassioned plea that my Cinderella run couldn't end. Fine. Suddenly, it went from like a 70-30 beating all the way last night to 55-45. I got home and now it was getting close. And by the way, for Joey Bag of Donuts' purposes, it is like the most voted upon matchup by an enormous margin. It is. Like almost 3,000 votes. There might actually be 3,000 votes now. Okay. Last night, it's about midnight. I'm way past my bedtime at that point. I noticed something. The poll has been unretweeted and re-retweeted by my competitor to goose the numbers again because things were getting a little uncomfortably close. I think that's a violation. Now that shows me that he really wants to win. Would that not be your answer here, Donnie? He wants to beat me.
Absolutely.
Wants to prove a point. And I gotta be honest with you. It might have lit a fire in me. Because while I might not have, look like the athlete of today on Twitter. My hiney's a lot smaller than it used to be. My typing fingers aren't as fast as they used to be. I ain't too pretty. All that stuff. I'm a fighter, Donnie. And I know people. I might only have 36,394 humble followers. But I know the right people. And much like John F. Kennedy's father delivered him Illinois in the 1960 presidential election, through some interesting means, if you talk to any Kennedy assassination theorist. I know people who could maybe spike this vote. And while I would never have gone this route before, I think it might be time. I think I could make this thing turn around in a big hurry. But that would involve me doing, Donnie, one thing. Even acknowledging for like 10 seconds that I care enough to act on this. And so I am torn. Because the much bigger part of me does not care. I got the win that I wanted against the person I wanted. Now I'm gravy. But I could do it.
I knew you were already happy with where you were.
Sweet 16's a good run.
A satisfying run.
Good run.
And because of what you said last week, not really worrying about any spot after that, I wasn't going to send anything out there. But then Pony sent something out yesterday, which puts the pressure on me. However, these polls are like a week long. So I still have a couple days here. I'm going to wait a couple of days. I'll put my endorsement in. But now it all falls on you. What you want to do.
Oh, I think I could
going
make,
forward.
I think I could turn this around very quickly. I think I could throw in that 1996 Kentucky full court press, recruit some of the right people to my cause here, and flip these numbers in a big hurry. Now I'm distracted, though. Kill the music. Did Pony just give away his soon-to-be baby girl's name on Twitter? Am I like the last man to this here?
I think it's a work. I saw it earlier. Because he gave us a phony name, too.
Okay, but the one that he put out here on Twitter, I'll just say it. He told us Bertha, and we no-sold it because we thought he might actually be serious. He said it's an old family name. He said Bertha. I kind of, like, I don't want to laugh at this because if your daughter is going to be named Bertha, that would be jacked up that I laughed at you when you said it. And then he was like, come on, guys. It was a joke. This one seems much more plausible. This is a name people actually give girls that's not from 1922.
Stella?
Stella. That is absolutely a girl's name that's getting put out there still.
Is it?
Yes.
I knew like one Stella my whole life, and it was a lady that went to my church, and I think she was born in 1922.
Cookie was there to cover it. No, I can't figure out if he gave this away.
I feel like it's a work. I mean, like the rest of it, I thought was genuine. I thought the rest was a shoot, brother. Thanking the people for kind words.
Yeah, I know. The rest of it, see, that's what makes me think it's not a shoot or it's not a work, the name. The rest of it's a shoot, brother.
It's best whenever those lines are blurred.
Oh, come on.
A little bit.
Are you Vince Russo? Man, now we're not even going inside baseball 48 hours from opening day. We're going inside pro wrestling. I don't know, man. I can't decide. I almost want to text him and be like, are you actually, it's fine. I think it's a perfectly cool name. But, like, are you full of, I almost swore there, are you full of it right now or what? You know what I got to do to go right to the source is go to Amanda. Be like, hey, Pony tweeting your daughter's name out there for everyone to see. I know it ain't Bertha. What do I do ultimately? You think I stack the deck in the poll? It's time to get in there and start scrapping?
Go for it.
I don't want to appear too sincere. I do not want to appear like I give a crap. Because I really don't. I'm concerned about making dinner and getting the kids to bed. Not winning a Twitter poll from a bag of donuts.